Rick, what do you say you and me take a walk over to the tavern?
Let's pull up a chair.
A little something to eat.
Welcome to the Mouse and Castle.
Come on, Johnny, what are we waiting for?
This is a gathering place for fans of all things Disney. So sit back,
chow down,
have some sips, and chit-chat about the magical world created by Walt Disney.
For too long, I've been parched of thirst and unable to quench it. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mouse and Castle podcast. I'm your host, Riley Blanton. So glad to have you back on board with us. It's the Mouse and Castle podcast. We talk about Disney. And if you're here to hear something else, you're in the wrong place, damn it. But if you like Disney, just come on in. Come on in. We'll talk about Disney a little bit, won't we, Aaron?
Yeah. Just dropping a curse word right at the beginning.
I know. It's a family-friendly show. Do I bleep myself?
That's like a safe, you know, that's like a PG curse word.
You know, we can stay PG, you know. Right?
Yeah, we're not going to get the explicit mark or anything like that.
We serve beers here, right? In our, you know, virtual Star Wars, I say Star Wars, Disney pub. Oh my gosh. No, Aaron, let me tell you something. I'm so serious about tonight's show. I've printed out
our paper.
Yes, I've printed out the articles that we're going to reference, just because I feel more engaged with the material. I've done
serious times, man. People are like leaving Disney. You know, like people are stepping down. Mm-hmm. Galaxy's Edge is ruining everything.
Right? Thank you.
No, it's
about
serious
time.
You need print. You need printouts.
Listen, before Disney deletes all of the internet.
They're ruining Star Wars.
No, actually,
Star
I just
Wars
figured out
Disney.
it's everything's ruined. That's why Bob Iger's leaving. No, I actually just figured out how to get my Wi-Fi printer to work. So I was very excited about this.
Just wasting the ink.
I know. Just killing trees left and right. But no, the headline from The Motley Fool, which has become one of my favorite of all the outlets to talk about like geek media, have become some of my favorites, and here it is. Disney gets serious about saving Star Wars Land. Okay, sorry.
I don't even understand the logic behind that.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what.
Saving something that, it's not like they're going to close it.
I'll tell you, Aaron. What if they do?
There.
What if it's a failure? What if they just pack up the Millennium Falcon? Aaron, I think it's time to panic. Anyway, so
the funniest thing I heard was somebody said that they were going to retheme it into an Aladdin themed area.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I'm like, what? Like, guys, the second ride's not even open yet.
Yeah. Well, so we are being facetious, but I actually really like this article because it puts together a narrative that I hadn't really strung together yet and connects a few dots. So put on your conspiracy tinfoil hats, people, for just a second. As we take a journey, author is Rick Manuez, and he says, it basically, there's a media blitz that kicks off Tuesday, as we recorded it, it's Wednesday, so we're right in the middle of it, on basically every single freaking media platform Disney owns to advertise for Galaxy's Edge. And I'd heard like little things here and there, like this 2-hour special they're doing on Freeform, and I'd seen like a few new ads popping up here and there. But when you string it all together, it kind of paints a picture. We'll start out Tuesday. There's a promotional spot on ABC's Live with Kelly and Ryan, and that was in the morning. That evening on Blackish on ABC, there was another promo on Galaxy's Edge. Then quickly after that, they're running promos and ads and promo spots and various types of segments on the different platforms. And all of these platforms include Good Morning America, The View, Nightline, several of the network's primetime shows, including Modern Family. I actually saw this on Instagram, where some of the cast of Modern Family were at the parks, are going to be advertising for it in one way or another. There's going to be a promo on Dancing with the Stars, and it's all throughout this week, Aaron, all plugging the 14-acre expansion that we all know and we've talked about ad nauseum, Galaxy's Edge. And, of course, that's to say nothing of Freeform, which used to be ABC Family, which I didn't even know that change had happened. I didn't realize ABC Family wasn't a thing anymore. I only learned when I was researching, doing my copious amounts of research for the show tonight. I'm here for you people. But Freeform's doing that two-hour special with Neil Patrick Harris on, that's just a bunch of celebrities talking about Galaxy's Edge. This, and I'll get through the rest of the piece, Aaron, then I want to kind of hear your response to the overall picture once we put all the pieces down. So sorry about the monologuing here. So basically, Disneyland attendance last quarter was down despite opening of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. And we've already talked about a lot of the various factors that hit that. But then quickly, we just had the opening of Galaxy's Edge at Disney World. But there was also Hurricane Dorian. There have been lines, but certainly not the kind of lines that we saw with, say, Avatar. Essentially, this galactic takeover of all of Disney's media platforms kind of comes together to paint a picture of their sort of marketing reset, their take two to really push and market Galaxy's Edge, coming in the context of Bob Iger's jokes on the earnings call at the beginning of this year, Aaron. I think we talked about it, where he just joked, yeah, I'm just going to have to tweet that it's open and we're already, and that's all the marketing we need to do. Everyone already wants to go to this thing. So there's that. There's the, you know, some headlines recently about a possible recession. It's, there's a lot of factors here where it looks like Disney's trying to position themselves to be the ones to be able to re-energize the excitement for park attendance this final quarter of the year. Your take, Aaron?
I think that these outlets like to sensationalize.
Yeah, but Aaron, they have
this type of thing.
They have the guys from SportsCenter doing a segment on Galaxy's Edge. The guys from SportsCenter.
But think about it. This is a big expansion that they've been spending years and years developing. They're gonna promote it.
Well, yeah, but why now? It's, what took them so long?
They've been promoting it. I've been seeing stuff like
They invited a bunch of bloggers. They should have done this media pitch like the month before and at the opening. That's when all of this sort of happened.
They had launch specials on ABC already. They had stuff on the Disney Channel. They had live streaming of the opening event that you could watch. This stuff's been going on. This is just they're now doing a big push. Now, I'm not going to say that it's not driven somewhat by the low attendance, because sure, it could be. Mm-hmm. But you think they filmed some of this stuff after they found out the attendance was low? No. If they're filming a two-hour segment with, who'd you say it was?
Like Neil Patrick Harris and a bunch of celebrities. Yeah.
They filmed that before it was even open. I guarantee you. This is stuff that they've been planning, not in reaction to the low attendance. This is stuff they've already been planning. Now, are they kind of doing a consolidated effort right now because of the low attendance? Sure, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's also the lead up to the new Star Wars movie, and they're just pushing out new stuff for that. The new trailer is going to be hitting soon. So this is timing-wise, it makes sense. They're going to be pushing for this. The new ride is opening soon, so it makes sense. They're going to be re-advertising. If you want to turn it into a, oh man, Galaxy's Edge is horrible and nobody likes it, nobody wants to go, and so now Disney's doing this desperate effort. If you want to turn it into that, sure, that's going to get clicks. But
or maybe your article printed out and read on a podcast.
Yeah.
Well, I honestly hadn't put together, I think for me the significance is, now that I'm taking off my conspiracy sensationalism hat for a second, I think there's certainly credence to this is sort of a secondary marketing push that is a reaction to the lower attendance, because Bob Iger has said as much as far as being a little disappointed in the way they marketed. I forget what he's been on a ton of outlets recently because he has this new book coming out, and so he's talked about that a little bit. But I think this is the responsible leveraging of their platforms to put Galaxy's Edge in front of people who don't think about the Disney parks every day. So people who are watching the mainstream sitcoms that are airing on a mainstream American network, like that's different than just streaming it to the Disney parks YouTube channel or something like that. So I think it is a consolidated effort to bolster attendance for this final quarter. But I think it's all of the factors we've talked about. It's the pass holder blockout, you know, poor call. It's the hurricane that was. There's literally an evacuation in Florida for almost a week. So like that is going to hurt your bottom line for your theme park in Florida. So there's a bunch of reasons why they want people going back to the parks and boosting park attendance overall. Because you got to remember, Disney, the company, when we're talking about the Disney parks, the financial success of them is based on attendance. And attendance is based on how do they attract people to the park. So it's not like they're worried about Star Wars failing or not being attractive to people, or Galaxy's Edge not being attractive to park goers. That's why it's the centerpiece of all the marketing, trying to get people to go to the parks. So they're leveraging everything they've accomplished with Galaxy's Edge that makes it the most advanced expansion and the biggest expansion, and in this guy's humble opinion, the best expansion that Disney's ever done. They are using that as the centerpiece of the marketing to get people back to the parks.
Yeah, I think across the board, park attendance is low. And I think that it's funny to see people try to blame that specifically on Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Galaxy's Edge was a big failure, so that's why park attendance is
low. Like, what do you think? What do they think it would be if there was no Galaxy's Edge? Like, if there was no Galaxy's Edge, would, like, nobody be at the parks?
Like, less people went to the parks because of Galaxy's Edge? No. Yeah. There's so many other factors. Now, is Galaxy's Edge underperforming? 100%.
Yeah.
I'm not such a Disney apologist that I'm going to say that it's been a resounding success. I think it's underperforming. I don't think it's had the impact they thought it was going to have. I don't think it's had the appeal that they thought it was going to have. Is it a flop? Is it a failure? Are people not going to the parks because of Star Wars? No.
Yeah.
That's not why. And these, and it did that, did the, you know, the woman who just stepped down from Disney, what was her name?
Yeah, I've got it here. I've got the new people here. They just named new leadership for both Disneyland and Walt Disney World today, kind of in response to that story yesterday. I don't have her name in front of me, but yesterday the story
Catherine
broke.
Powell. Powell stepped down. You know, her position was eliminated, quote unquote. And I saw headlines where it's like, you know, amid Galaxy's Edge failure, this person steps down. It's like, I don't think that's why. I really don't think that had anything to do with it. I think this was a planned, you know, hiring of new people and a planned replacement of Catherine Powell. And I don't think it had anything to do with Galaxy's Edge. But if you throw Star Wars into a title, a headline, that along with somebody leaving Disney, it's going to get more clicks.
Yeah, you know? That's so. Exactly why. That's why. Look at the title of this podcast. I'm not.
Riley Blanton steps down from Mouse and Castle. Galaxy's Edge failure.
Amid criticism of the mouse. No. No, but Disney this today, kind of in response to that story, named new leadership for both Disneyland and Disney World. I don't know if you're tracking the story, Aaron.
Yeah, I saw that today, but it's news to me.
So
news.
I just saw this. So Disneyland Resort's going to be overseen by Rebecca Campbell, who was most recently the president of Europe, Middle East, and Africa for the company's direct-to-consumer and international segment. And then Walt Disney World is going to be overseen by Josh D'Amaro, who was previously doing Disneyland. So they're moving him back to the East Coast, and they're assuming their new roles in November. And the Disneyland Paris duties are going to be handed off to Michael Kogleser, who leads the Disney parks and resorts in Asia. So essentially, what's the lady's name? You just said it, Aaron, I know. But
Catherine Powell.
Her position was an executive in charge of all the parks. And essentially, she did her job. Like, it was about integrating the way the parks were developing. And some of the stories today I was reading were basically she accomplished that, and now they want to empower each of these new positions to really handle their specific park well.
Which is probably a great strategy. You get a little bit more focus on specific parks instead of having one person over the whole thing.
Yeah.
So.
No, exactly. Well, and they did lose some stock. What was it? So it fell 3% when the news broke of the park attendance dropping at the last earnings call. They also announced the raising of prices. So I guess it's interesting to see how they handle this going forward, because here's the thing that Disney can do. They can always run specials. They can always run discounts, special vacation packages to attract people to come back. Like if they overestimated the popularity or the demand for Galaxy's Edge, or if they overestimated the price people are willing to pay and it's hurting their attendance, it's pretty much the easiest thing in the world to run a bunch of specials to get attendance up. And so that's really all you have to do.
And they recently announced the kind of the late entry ticket where you can go later in the day for a cheaper price. I've been getting marketing emails around that because I have a trip coming up to Disney, and I've been getting these emails like you can get a 3 or 4 day one park per day late entry for, and I forget what the price ended up being, but it was like $70-something per day, which is significantly cheaper than a typical 1 day pass.
Yeah.
So I mean, they're responding to the low attendance in many ways, including offering these deals, including bolstering the marketing for Galaxy's Edge, whatever. There's a lot of strategy around it that they're really trying to, kind of get those numbers back up, which is what a business does. You know, they react.
So. Yeah, exactly. And that's why we've talked
about.
The
Disney parks aren't closing anytime soon.
Yeah. In fact, like, let's all, we can mourn for a second because Disney's pretty good at this. So this is probably more or less a hiccup as they figure out how to rectify this, and then it'll be really crowded again, and then we can be disappointed. Because I don't know about you, man, but my last two trips to the parks, one at Land and one at World, were pretty great, not having a lot of people there.
I was going to say, yeah, we should, as people that like to go to Disney a lot, we should be happy that the attendance is a bit lower right now. Get a little bit more breathing room.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think we'll keep a close eye on the story as it develops, because I have a feeling we might actually hear some pretty sweet discounts or deals or promotions that might come up in this fourth quarter at Disney. Or who knows? Maybe I'm being too optimistic, but that'd be kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. Aaron, I wanted to do a more fun non-news related segment. We've done that a few times here on the show, and I've always enjoyed it. So today, I shot you a text via the old Facebook Messenger earlier today. And I was like, well, why don't we do like a nice old top three? Top three, the Mouse and Castle's top three most underrated experiences at Disney. And then you promptly text me back. You're like, hey, man, I take this seriously. You can't just give me a heads up. I need time to prepare. Which,
hey, you're gonna make me pick a top three?
Mm-hmm.
I need like days to prepare.
What are we going to do when we do our top
thousands
10
of experiences?
Movies? Like, you are going to do like a 3-day workshop with all of your team at work. You're not going to work on anything related to your job, but like take over the whiteboards and plan our
post-it notes on the wall. Yeah, whiteboards. Yeah, just gotta like put up. Okay, Great Mouse Detective. No, let's move that down. Okay. Lilo and Stitch. Okay, move that up. Mm. Get rid of Oliver and Company. Throw that in the trash.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
yeah, that's the planning board for the ultimate top 10 animated film
that's
episode
coming.
That we do eventually.
Maybe we could do that like at the end of the year, like right at New Year's. Maybe that'd be kind of a fun little way to kick off 2020.
Riley Blanton steps down from Mouse and Castle amid controversy of animated film rankings.
That's true. So let's go in reverse order. I'll kick us off with my number three. Keep in mind, I've realized when I kind of look at these lists and rides and experiences and restaurants, and I realize just how little of the parks I've experienced. Because even though I've been there a good number of times as an adult, there are whole swaths of the classic rides and stuff that I've never even done before. Like, I was talking to my fiance Savannah about the show tonight, because that's what I do. I bug her about the podcast, and I was wondering like what are hers, and she mentioned like she felt they're kind of underappreciated, but the nostalgia for all of the classic rides, It's a Small World. I think she said the Snow White. Is there Snow White in Adventureland? I think or some or. You know, that area.
The Seven Dwarfs Mine Train?
No. From growing up. Like some of the...
Oh, from growing up.
Yeah, some of those really just older classic rides that often don't have that much of a line now. Those were hers. But I'll kick us up. My number three is actually the Monsters Laugh Floor. So I... When was it that I went to this? It was way back. It was one of the celebrations. It wouldn't have been Celebration 5... Would have been Celebration 6,
maybe? Because that was also in Orlando.
Was it in Orlando? Yeah, it would have had to have been Celebration 6, I think was the first, because I didn't go to Disney at 5, so this is 2012.
For you Disney fans that don't know what he's talking about when he says Celebration, it's a Star Wars event that they do.
Sometimes I forget which podcast brain to turn on, the Star Wars one or the Disney one. Yeah, the Star Wars convention is one of the first times I went to the parks. And we went to the, it was me, Teresa, Trisha Barr, Bethany. I feel like there's, the Skywalking Through Neverland people. And we went, and I didn't know what to expect. I was like, this is weird. Just like a Monsters, Inc. thing. But the quality of the improv, essentially it's basically a live theater show, but the way that there's the improv that interacts with the audience is just hilarious. And I found myself laughing out loud, which is appropriate because it's the laugh floor taking a theme.
If you're gonna
of
laugh
the,
anywhere, you should laugh on the laugh floor.
Exactly, because they had the cylinders that reacts based on the guest interaction, which is pretty cool. So the Monsters Laugh Floor, I don't think it's one of the ones that has, I think all of these, kind of the common theme is they don't usually have much of a line, which is always a nice part of a Disney Parks experience.
Yeah, I would say, I would agree with this one. And it's actually a technology they use in a couple different rides, not rides, but experiences where they have, you know, kind of this show and you're watching these digitally animated characters, but then there's a live voice actor.
How do they do that?
So there's a technology that's actually matching the mouth movements of the character with the live, voiceover actor, so they can actually interact with the audience. So there's some of it's pre-recorded, like the Mike and Sully stuff and stuff is pre-recorded, but then you have these other characters that come out that are literally live speaking to the audience as these digitally animated characters. It's really cool technology that they utilize in that, and they also do in... Turtle Talk with Crush.
That's
is
right.
Another one that at Epcot, mm-hmm. where kids can go and sit down in front of Crush, and he's in this like fake, aquarium like tank, and then he's talking through the glass. But they have a guy that's actually doing the voice live, so he can interact with the kids too. So it's a really cool experience, and because it's live, it's always a little bit different. So every time you go, because there's improv involved. And I don't know if you knew this, Riley, but when we're at the Halloween party, they actually are going to have a Halloween-themed version of the the Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor.
No way. Okay, well, let's make a stop.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So, and it's one of the candy stops, too, so you can go in there, get candy, and watch the Halloween-themed version.
What the heck? I'm in. 1,000%. Yeah. Well, sir, your number three.
My number three. So there's a lot of cool stuff to do at Disney that's not actually in the parks, and... You know, the resorts have, you know, good restaurants and things to do. And then obviously the big draw outside of the parks, probably the biggest draw is the Disney Springs,
yes.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But there is another area that is kind of Disney Springs-esque that is the Disney Boardwalk. And it's actually part of one of their resorts. They have a resort called the Boardwalk. And when you go to that resort, there is an actual boardwalk that goes around kind of a lake, and that whole area is themed kind of that they have a few different resorts there. They have the Yacht Club and the Beach Club Resort, and then obviously the Boardwalk Resort are all there. So it's kind of themed in that kind of old boardwalk style. architecture and, and that type of thing.
I'm
so
looking
it's actually
now.
Kind of like a thing that you don't hear a lot of people talk about, but it's a really cool area to go. And there are restaurants there. You can get reservations at the restaurants. You know, go to the boardwalk. You know, get some good food. There's actually a great view of Epcot right over the lake at night. You can actually see the Epcot ball. And it's kind of a little bit more of a low key option than if you don't want to go to Disney Springs where it's like super crowded.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want something a little more low key, a little more slower paced and scenic with a cool atmosphere, Disney Boardwalk is a great place to visit. And one of my favorite restaurants is there as well. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm looking at it here. It looks like I'm trying to place where it is in relation to Disney Springs.
So it's not, it literally sits right next to Epcot.
Interesting. The boardwalk does. No, there it is. Yeah. Cause there's.
So you have run on this boardwalk. It's part of the half marathon.
That's where I know, that's where I recognize it. Cause I've never been there. But then I was like, it seems vaguely familiar, but no, that's amazing. I've never actually been there properly other than just running through it. But that's really cool. I want to go.
Yeah, they have a great Italian restaurant there called Trattoria Al Forno.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bakery there, Ample Hills Creamery. There's a really good lunch spot called Big River Grill. Like, it's just a really cool area.
You seem to know it pretty well. Have you been, is it like a go-to for you? I've just never hung out there.
It has been, not every time I go to Disney World, but it definitely is, it is a go-to area for me if I'm just looking for a relaxed. It's kind of like when you have that off day where you're like, I don't really want to go to the parks today.
Yeah.
And you just want to kind of chill.
Mm.
This is a great thing. And there's actually an entrance. That whole area, there's like a pathway that goes all the way around the lake. So there's the boardwalk area, but then where the yacht club and the beach club is, there's a pathway on that side too. And there's an entrance right into Epcot, the back entrance into Epcot. So you can actually enter the parks from that area. So that's another advantage if you wanted to stay at one of those resorts, although they're pretty pricey.
Yeah, no, that's true. But maybe we'll make it a hang, cause like, I'm kind of making a list. Maybe I'm being too ambitious cause there's a lot of these things. I'm like, oh, I've never done that. I'll do it on the next Disney trip for the, wine and dine one. And we are going to be there for a bit, like, Thursday through Sunday. But even that, I think maybe there'll be a time in there to grab dinner or something. That'd be cool. But we'll see if we can figure it out. I'll jump in with my number two then. Tomorrowland. Specifically, the Tomorrowland Area Transit Authority. What? Like, I had no idea this was there. But it is there's almost never a line here. And it's basically a small transit train that circles around and above Tomorrowland and get some really awesome views, particularly, and I'm going to say this is the time you should go, is at night. You also get to peek inside Space Mountain. It's just a great way of, like, I remember going on this, I think it was the same trip. That was one of my first times at Magic Kingdom, where everyone's really pooped at the end of the day, and we just hopped on the Tomorrowland train and rode around and just watched the crowds from above. And it was very cathartic and it did not involve any more walking, which was really nice. So I really appreciate it. And there was almost nobody on it, which was pretty great.
Oh, that's cool. So are you talking about the People Mover?
Nope. I don't think it's not the
Tomorrowland Transit Authority People Mover.
I think so. I think that's what, I don't know if it's called.
So that's funny because I've never, when you were describing it, it sounds like the People Mover.
Yeah, it is.
But I'd never heard it called the full name before, so it was kind of throwing me off. But now I'm like, I'm Googling it, making sure I'm not, you know, saying the wrong thing. But I'm like, okay, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, that's a great hidden gem. I love the People Mover.
Yeah, yeah. No, that it's a go-to.
Super low-key. Yeah.
If the kids are tired, but you want something, yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice relaxing, like, especially if you're trying to get out of the sun, you know. It's a great ride, and like you said, there's usually not much of a line either. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Agreed.
Sir, your number two?
My number two. All right, so let me see. What should I list as my number two?
So he's got them, ladies and gentlemen. He's just trying to prioritize correctly.
In order. I'm going to say for my number two, I'm going to go with the Maharaja Jungle Trek.
You familiar with this? What?
Yeah, exactly.
I've never heard of this.
So you may have done it and just not realized you were doing it, but I'm a huge fan of Animal Kingdom, always have been. Actually had the opportunity to go to the Animal Kingdom the year it opened, back in 1998. So yeah, I've only ever known Disney World because that was the first time I went to Disney World. So I had never been to Disney World previous to the opening of Animal Kingdom. So it's always been part of Disney World to me. And just really fell in love with that park. And I know it's kind of – just the park itself is an underrated park. Now it's definitely been in the spotlight because of all the Pandora stuff. But previous to that, it was kind of like the low end. People were like, oh, if we got to skip one park, we're skipping Animal Kingdom. But I always loved the idea of it being kind of a theme park and also a nature preserve or zoo type situation where you could go and ride a roller coaster and then walk over and see elephants. You know, it's just a very cool mashup. And so I always loved it and loved like the safari and all of that stuff. So, but one of the things that a lot of people don't do or don't realize you can do at Animal Kingdom is they have these little pathways that you can go on that take you deeper into the park, and you can see different animals. So they have like one that's called Gorilla Falls, where the gorillas are at, and then they have this Maharaja Jungle Trek, which is where the tigers are at. And I'm a big fan, tigers, favorite animal. And you can go up to these, you go down these pathways. It's designed very cool, almost to look like ruins. And you can go back there, and then they have these walls of glass that are built into these ruins, and the tigers are behind it. So you can literally walk up to the glass and see the tigers in a somewhat natural habitat looking area. So, and more often than not, when you go back there, it's not like sometimes you go to a zoo and the animals are kind of hiding behind a thing and you never really see them. They're usually walking around, they're playing. I had one time that I went back there and the tiger literally walked right up to the glass. And so I was just like the thickness of the glass away from this giant tiger.
Are you a little scared?
No, but it was cool to see like this animal that close. And it's just one of my favorite things to do when I go to Animal Kingdom is go back on that trek.
Yes,
and take a look at the tigers.
Yeah, it looks. I had no idea that those paths were back there, and I literally just did like a pretty full day at Animal Kingdom, which is pretty hilarious when I think about it. That's awesome, man. I will, I guess next time we go to Animal Kingdom, which I will be taking my nieces probably to Animal Kingdom, that trip, probably that Friday morning. So I might have to include that on the list. They're big fans of all kinds of animals, which is why I think it's the perfect park to introduce them to. But yeah, man. All right. I'm going to jump up. It's my number one, and I go there pretty much every time I'm at the parks, and that's the Swiss Family Treehouse. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the Swiss Family Treehouse. So the list of Disney movies that I watched growing up, it's pretty narrow. I think I've told the stories on the podcast, so I won't belabor the point, but I grew up overseas, so the only movies we had access to were the ones that friends and family would send with us as a VHS tape. So we had like the same probably dozen or so movies and TV shows that we'd watch over and over and over and over again. But one of them was The Swiss Family Robinson, taped off of TV at my grandmother's house. So it was a pretty heavily edited version, if I remember right, because the whole thing was like an hour and a half.
Did they pause the commercials they were recording this?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you'd have the little each commercial.
I remember the days.
So, but I just remember always thinking, oh, that as like a 8-year-old kid, oh, that's so cool. I want to live in that treehouse. So as a college age dude going to the parks the first time, I didn't know that that was a thing at the parks. And then I see it there and I'm like, no way. It's like a specific part of my childhood, which I'm sure that's how most people feel when they go to all the other rides about the movies that they grew up watching. But for me, that is the Swiss Family Treehouse. And there's never much of a crowd. No special line or anything like that. It's a little narrow if there is a crowd sometimes, but you just literally walk through a tree, and it's really well decorated and themed, and it offers kind of a nice view over Adventureland. It's pretty great. So,
yeah, it is pretty great. And that's actually been a late discovery for me as someone who's been to the parks many times. That was something I just never prioritized.
Yeah.
I just never did it. And I think the first time I did it might have been last year, where I finally was like, you know what, I probably should go up in that thing. You know, it's been here, you know, every time I come here, and I just never take the time to do it.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe you and I walked through it once, but I can't remember.
Because I always bother to do it whenever I'm in Adventureland.
Okay. I think maybe last year, when we were there, or at some point we walked through it. But yeah, so I may have only walked through it like twice now, but I completely agree with it's so well designed. And I actually grew up on Swiss Family Robinson movie as well. So I just didn't realize how cool it was going to be, and walking through it was really cool. And I think Disneyland, I believe, changed theirs from Swiss Family Robinson to Tarzan Treehouse.
Oh, it'd be a pretty easy transition.
Yeah, I think they were trying to get the theming, the IP, to a more modern Disney thing. But I think the Disneyland one is Tarzan, and then the Disney World one is Swiss Family Robinson.
Yeah, no, I could see that. Yeah. I could see that. Yeah, man. And all right, round us out, sir. Your number one.
All right, so my number one underrated thing to do at Disney is actually at Epcot. And this is something, when they were announcing all of these changes that were coming, one of the rumors was that this was going to get taken down.
Oh, no.
So I was a little nervous, but after they did reveal the plans in D23, this is still standing. It's still going to be part of the plan. So, but the Seas building, that is one of my favorite things to do at Epcot, is to go over to the Seas, and specifically what they call, and I didn't even realize this until I looked it up today, what the area of that building is called, but it's called the Sea Base. And that's where they have the big aquarium and the dolphins and the sharks and all of that stuff.
I didn't even know this. I didn't even know this was here, man. I didn't, honestly.
So I'm educating you on the hidden things in Disney, Riley, that you got to check out. So,
oh, look
next
at
time
this,
we're there.
The Finding Nemo sharks. The Finding Nemo sharks. I'm looking at the pictures.
We will be there for for wine and dine. So we'll have to do a walk through the aquarium.
Oh yes, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that whole area is really cool. They actually have they have manatees there too that you can see. So they have this whole big aquarium. You can walk in it's like this giant circular aquarium that's kind of all around you, and thousands of fish that are inside of it. Very well done aquarium. And the divers will go in sometimes and feed the fish, so you can actually see the divers go in amongst the fish. And then of course there's Finding Nemo stuff there. There's a Finding Nemo ride. That's not a great ride, but it's there. And that's where Turtle Talk with Crush is as well. So that whole building, whole area of Epcot is definitely underrated.
I've seen Turtle Talk with Crush, but at Disneyland, which is like over with the Beauty and the Beast library. I forget the exact part, but it was pretty great. So I wouldn't mind doing Crush. Crush is kind of hilarious.
Yeah, we went one time to Turtle Talk with Crush. We went once, and Quinn chickened out because he was very young. His first time going to Disney, he was like 4. And he chickened out when he got up to the front. He didn't get close enough where he would have the chance to interact with Crush. And so we had to pep talk him.
Left,
we did something else. I was like, hey, you want to go back and do that Turtle Talk? Because you could kind of see the strategy. If you wanted your kid to be part of the show, you kind of knew where to set them and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so once I got the idea of it, I talked to him. I kind of got his, you know, I gave him the pep talk. I'm like, hey, when we go back in there, you got to sit right on the front row. You got to sit in this area. When they ask if any kids have questions, you raise your hand really high. You know, kind of gave him the pep talk. And he did. And it was really cool because it was his first time at Disney World, and he got a chance to be a part of that show. And they actually asked him a question. He got to ask Crush a question, and Crush like talked to him like, hey, Quinn, you know, like that kind of thing. So it was really cool.
Aww.
Really cool experience.
And you didn't put too much pressure. You weren't like, dang, sit right here and raise your hand.
you talk to Crush. And then look back at the camera.
No, no. Well, I'll tell you what. I think that's a show, man. I think that's another episode of The Mouse and Castle in the can. It's hard to believe. But thanks so much for listening, guys. And Aaron, as always, thanks so much for being a part of the show. I actually want to start. We always have our sort of plugs and things at the end of the show. But I actually wanted to do a specific shout out slash plug primarily for the Mouse and Castle YouTube channel. I've just been populating it with some fun segments of the podcast. Before I did our first sort of Disney video blog, I posted that there from our last trip. So there's a lot of cool stuff that'll be coming up on the YouTube channel. But we want to hit the first set number of subscribers that YouTube requires to make it official and make a pretty URL and, you know, unlock a bunch of cool YouTube features. So we're just getting that going. Here's what you need to do. Even if you primarily listen to the podcast, there's going to be a lot of cool YouTube content coming to the Mouse and Castle YouTube channel. So we're going to have a link to it right on mouseandcastlepodcast.com. Make sure you click through and subscribe on YouTube. And we really do appreciate that. And that's also how you can subscribe to this podcast. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Mouse and Castle Podcast is available. Aaron, tell people where they can find you on the old internet.
You can find me on Twitter at AVGoins. I'm also on Instagram under the same name.
Nice, nice. And then, of course, I am at The Riley Guy, R-I-L-E-Y, The Riley Guy. On Instagram and Twitter, that's where you can find me mostly these days. And of course, it's at Mouse and Castle on Twitter and Instagram. Make sure you follow us there if you haven't. And finally, the destination for any and all things Mouse and Castle. That's mouseandcastlepodcast.com.
Yo.
You need to let me pause this real quick.